she's doing? She's on trial. She's doing an assignment for her course. That's what she's doing. This is part of her assignment. And she gave me my packet.
Oh, here, yes. So this morning I was going to start out with the musculoskeletal alterations. I was going to cover a number of points. We'll start with the basics. And then as we go through, please feel free to ask me any questions that you have. I do tend to talk a little bit fast. I think the lights have to go off. I tried to make a
dark. No, just hit B on
that. I did.
Oh, the
light
thing? Yeah. So
that should we close
this one? Yeah, you should.
If you could.
How's that? Some of them don't know the button, but that's fine.
Okay.
I might be calling you.
Say that again. Remember, spell it right. Little T.
No.
And say the little letters. Well, the little letters are, well, you all know the RN, BSN. CEN is Certified Emergency Nurse, and I have my paramedic. I've been a paramedic for many years. Started out in the first aid squad as an EMT, and then went on from there. So I really enjoy the pre-hospital, and now my area is the emergency department. So hopefully I can offer you a little bit of extra insight, especially with orthopedics. Musculoskeletal really is an area that I've spent a lot of time with. So, and as a new nurse out of school, that's where I started, was on an orthopedic floor. I was told it was neuro-orthopedic. It ended up being 99% orthopedic and like 1% neuro. But I learned an awful lot, and I do appreciate that. It's those people that I had years ago. So as I said, as I go through, feel free to ask me any questions that you might have. On Monday, I told Professor Kennett I can bring in some different casting materials that we use now, some different splinting, because things have changed over the years. They found a lot of different reasons why things work better. We're not seeing as much compartment syndrome anymore. We're not seeing as many complications because our care has changed. Now, they went to Brennan 5 yesterday?
They did.
Okay, and that was anything good there yesterday?
Well, we had to do it in a whole different way. So ask them. Ask them if they saw anything good or the field. They had a different kind of experience.
Yeah. We saw a machine that went like that.
Well, the CPM, that's for the knee surgery. That's a continuous passive motion machine, and that's for patients that have had knee surgery, and that's to continually flex the knee for their physical therapy. That's good. Anybody in a the trapezes with the traction for the fractured hips, femurs? Mm-hmm. So you saw the weights hanging? Okay, good.
So somebody had a patient with Buck's traction who was going to surgery yesterday.
You were going to surgery yesterday? Anybody in skeletal traction?
Mary had
You had some skeletal, so with the pins and skeletal traction? Good. Okay. So you still see a fair amount of patients. The orthopedic patients are in the hospital for a long time. So anybody with musculoskeletal, it's always going to be at least a couple weeks, not with some of the other conditions where they're in and out. But until they get sent to rehab, it's a long process. So I'll start out. Again, you should have a handout. You should have the PowerPoint handout. And then I gave you a handout on just some different types of fractures. So when we talk about them, it helps to be able to see the picture of exactly what type of fracture that is. Anybody have any broken bones in here? A few. Which one?
This one and this one.
At the same time?
No, two different times.
My femur, I was actually in traction.
Oh.
For a month.
For a month you're in traction. Okay. So then when we get to those parts where you complications, you can tell us if you had any of those. Good. So the objectives today are really to go through the normal process of bone development, healing, different complications. We'll go through sprains, strains, and any musculoskeletal things that you might see. So I wanted to start out first with a little bit about the epidemiology, about why we have a lot of these events occurring. About half of, believe it or not, our hospital admissions are related to extremity trauma. So that's really high. So that's like half of the admission. So it's really important. You will see a lot of orthopedic patients, musculoskeletal, on any floor that you might be on. And a lot of times it's in combination with other things that they have going on. And the elderly are at highest risk, and there are several reasons for that. As we get older, a lot of things start to change. Physiologically, what happens when you get older is your elasticity in your connective tissue is decreased, so you don't have as much connective tissue stretch as you used to have. Decreased resilience in your articular cartilages, and then you have a decrease in your muscle bulk tone from disuse. You're not as active when you get older, so your muscles aren't as strong. Seeing we're all in nursing school now, we're all in great shape and run to school, right? Run to school, do exercise, and as nurses, you won't be sedentary for a long time, so you don't have to worry about physical activity. But it does. Physical activity is really important. It's not good to be in bed all the time. It's not good to lay around. It's not good to be inactive because your muscles atrophy and you lose a lot of the function. Pelvic fractures are still the third leading cause of death, primarily from motor vehicle accidents. And that's because you have some pelvic vessels that run right through the middle of your pelvis, your mesenteric vessels. And once they get lacerated, you can bleed to death almost instantly or have an emboli occur. So we're very cautious with pelvic fractures. They have to be hospitalized. They have to get good prophylaxis. And we'll go into detail with each of these as we go through. Femur and ankle fractures we see mostly with car accidents, but we do see a lot of those with other things, and that happens primarily because when you're in a car accident, your first instinct is to tense yourself up, try to slam on the brakes, and by that tension that you create, you now fracture an ankle, and then your femur buckles and breaks also. So very common. Jumping out of a window, and really depends on what you hit, what you land on. If I jumped out of the window and I landed on a bush, I'd probably most likely not be as seriously injured than if I missed the bush and I hit the sidewalk. And even if you land on your feet, you know, you can break your ankles, and then you also will get probably a fracture of your back, right, from all that compression. Keeping in mind, the elderly are our biggest concern, and also our children, our pediatric patients. Kids, always keep in mind, have the heavier heads in circumference to their bodies. So they have what we call, I always learned, was a bowling ball on a Q-tip. And that's how heavy their heads are, and that's why they always, that's why they always land on their heads. So they most likely have those type of injuries. Kids are resilient, but they do they fall. And from extremity trauma or extremity injuries, there's still about 8,000 deaths a year. So that's pretty high. So we hopefully will see that number go down as our care improves or changes and we look at ways to make things better. There's a lot of different ways that things can happen. You can have broken bones, assaults. If you're attacked, certainly if you have injuries at home, we've all maybe tripped down the steps on a rug. You have a lot of activities you may do, sports. There's a lot of different ways you can hurt yourself. Slipping on the ice coming into school today, all the goose droppings on the way in can certainly create a hazard when you're trying to walk in. So there's different ways that you can be hurt. It really depends on what you land on. With a lot of our assault injuries, we do see a fair amount, sadly. And again, it's not just our age, but you always want to be cautious with the children, pediatric population, and even the elderly, because the elderly are commonly abused, and it's overlooked. So always keep that in the back of your mind when you see somebody with a lot of broken bones, a lot of bruised areas that are in different stages of healing, that there may be abuse. And as nurses, we're really patient advocates, and you really need to report that. And you guys now especially, you're really doing very thorough assessments. So you may be doing that head-to-toe, pick up something that maybe somebody else missed. Okay, looking here, MVA, what happens in a car accident, you're thrust forward, that acceleration, and then you're thrust backward. So maybe I'll smack my nose on the steering wheel, and then when I'm thrown backwards, now I hit my back, hit my shoulder. So you can have a lot of tearing, ripping. Bones don't usually rip as easily as some of your arteries and vessels will. But always remember what lies behind. If I break a rib, what's sitting behind that? You know, what organs behind that rib that I broke, or what vessels behind there? Arms, a lot of times wrists are fractured when you're hanging onto the steering wheel. And most of us, if you think you're going to fall, your first instinct is to put your hand out. So you will a lot of times see people with broken wrists, sometimes bilateral broken wrists. Or if somebody's going to hit you, you're going to put your hand up. And we see a lot of fractures in the arm for people that have been assaulted or attacked. Looking at this car here, you can certainly tell that whoever was sitting in that seat most likely had some extensive injuries. They snapped that telephone pole. So the force that it took to snap that energy has to go somewhere. And that's what, anytime there's any kind of a mechanism or a traumatic event, you want to know how much mechanism was involved or how much energy. So if the body took that kind of an impact, you would expect a lot of significant injuries than if I just fell and tripped going out here and broke, you know, fractured my ankle going down the steps. There's not as much force there. And we already talked about the elderly and why their falls are so frequent. Going too fast? Is okay? Looking at the bone, just remembering some of the functions of the bone. The bone has a lot of very important functions. First one is it supports our skeletal system. We wouldn't be able to stand up straight if we didn't have our bone function, skeletal system. And we also need that soft tissue that goes along with it to hold everything together. It allows a lot of protection from our internal organs. So if we didn't have our ribs protecting portions of our liver and other vital organs, or even our mediastinum or our heart, we would be more susceptible to a lot of things. The bones store a lot of minerals and salts, and that's very important. So when you have an injury to a bone, you have broken bones, you always have to keep in mind that you're going to have electrolyte imbalances. you're going to have a loss in your normal salt and fat metabolism that you would normally have. And because it stores the salt and fat, when there's a broken bone now, those things can now float freely throughout the system. We don't want fat floating throughout the system, okay? Because that's why with broken bones, you're always susceptible to a fat emboli or a clot, because that occurs. So when patients are injured or they have a fracture of any type or a musculoskeletal, you always want to be cautious of their nutrition, make sure they're getting good nutrition to replace what they've lost. Another very, very important function of the bones is it's a site for formation of blood cells, the red blood cells. So you have the bone marrow, and that's where the hemopoiesis takes place. So you have the production in the bone marrow of the red blood cells, which is a vital function of the bone. And believe it or not, about 98% of the calcium in the extracellular fluid is in the bones and the body. So your bones are full of calcium, and it's very important. So when, as we get older, you get the osteoporosis and different things start to happen. It's because your calcium levels need to be adjusted, or patients that are deficient in calcium are going to be more susceptible to have musculoskeletal injuries. So when does this all start? Believe it or not, as you're in the womb being developed, your bones start to grow. They start to develop. This occurs prenatally and right through the stage until you're actually born. The growth starts at the end of the bone, and then it grows towards the center. And this is a long process over many, many years. What usually happens is the bones, they get longer, and then the diameter of the bone actually stretches out and becomes wider. So that's why it's so important, especially with kids. We're always very concerned about those growth plates, where they are, because you have the epiphyseal areas that are not well developed yet. Those are your epiphyseal plates or your growth plates. And up until the age of about 15 for girls, boys about 16, they're not really well developed yet, those growth plates. Eventually, those growth plates will turn into bone and become hard and become structurally sound. But until then, you're always concerned with that. Believe it or not, all of us will continue to mature our bones until we're up to the age of 25. Some of the books say 21, but the literature I just found recently said up to the age of 25. So some of you may still be having your bones maturing. Some of us are, they're matured. We're set. We're done. Now we're going on. You get a little lull in the middle, 25 to 35, and then it starts going downhill back the other way.
So continue to form up until like 21, 25?
They're not forming. They're maturing. They're getting stronger. The diameter, the strength, the structure, and then it becomes all bone now. So it's a form structure versus the soft areas. And especially kids, and that's why you have to make sure. Kids sometimes are really hard to even tell if they have a fracture, and that's why it's so important when we get into the assessment that you know and make sure they always have the x-rays done, because a lot of times there's a fracture there. If it doesn't heal properly, then years down the road you find out that bone didn't develop because there was a fracture. So it's not only the maturation but the shaping and then the consolidation of the bone. Okay, so I think you all remember from your anatomy and physiology about the cells that occur with bone formation and the pretty amazing different areas of the body, similar to the brain, that auto-regulates itself. The bone goes through a process of formation and reabsorption, and it's a continual process that goes on. It's automatic. We don't have to tell our bones, okay, it's time to absorb calcium, it's time to absorb phosphate. They just know to do that. And this process continues so that your bones don't continue to grow excessively large, widen out in diameter, and then become like bigger than the rest of our body. So it's a continual process. The osteocytes are the major bone-forming cells in your body, and the osteoclasts are the cells that are responsible for that reabsorption process. They usually stay dormant until they're needed to kick in and start the reabsorption process. And your parathyroid plays a very vital role. That's the gland that controls those hormones that start this and continue this reabsorption process. So it's a continual reabsorption of the calcium phosphate. So if you have someone who has a parathyroid that's not functioning, you can expect that there's going to be problems also with their bone development, with that hormone production, and also their bone structure. These hormones are absorbed in the intestines. These electrolytes, the potassium and the calcium, absorbed in the intestine, utilized, and then they're excreted through the kidneys. So if you have anybody that we talked about a couple weeks ago with intestinal problems, they're going to have problems absorbing these electrolytes. So anybody with intestinal problems, always be concerned with their electrolytes. And then anybody who has kidney failure or acute kidney crisis, any type of kidney concern, you know they're not going to be able to excrete. The calcium phosphate's going to build up in the body as well as all of your other electrolytes. Vitamin D, we all remember, is very, very important for bone development and for this reabsorption process. Anybody remember what the disease is that kids get, that vitamin D deficiency in a lot of the countries where there's malnourished mostly? Rickets. Rickets, right. Rickets is a disease, a vitamin D deficiency, common in countries especially, or children who have malnutrition. So drinking that glass of milk is a good thing. Very important to have you know, good maintenance of your calcium and your phosphate. Yes, in small amounts.
Not enough to.
But it does, but not significantly where that's all you could rely on.
I heard some weird disease one time that like the bones keep growing and growing and they never stop and it becomes like they imprison the body eventually like movement and stuff. Did you ever hear about that?
There's a lot of diseases with the bone, congenital problems, with the dwarf syndrome. There's
like
a number. I don't know what the name of that. Right.
Which is really an endocrine gland problem. Yeah. We'll talk about it next week a little bit, because it's relatively rare.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very noticeable when you see it.
Yeah. Right. And some of them have the gross development, but they're not structurally sound. So that's something you always want to keep in mind. Although it looks like it's well-formed or it's extremely large, it may not be structurally. You know, some people have developed, and then they can't even stand up, their femurs will fracture. And I'm trying to blank with what that disease is. But there's a number of different diseases with the bone. And then we get into some of the musculature. There's a number of them with, you know, muscular dystrophy and a lot of other diseases. So they may have good bone structure but no muscle capability. Okay, so we're going to go over a little bit about the architecture of the bone in the next slide. I have a nice picture of each of these areas. But the diaphysis is that long shaft of your bone, the nice long part. It's compact, dense, and it's very slender. So it's not very thick, but so it can be fractured easily, and it is called the shaft. The epiphysis is the bone end. That's the calcaneous end. It's spongy. It's a tissue housing for your red bone marrow. So that's a vital area. Higher risk in children because it can alter the growth of their bones. So in that area, they have mostly epiphysis area plates versus the actual bone structure, so they're not well developed yet. So that's why we're always concerned with the kids. The articular cartilage covers the outside of the bone. It's a little bit of a, it's not protected by the periosteum. So it covers the bone, the end of each of the bone, but it doesn't have any protection for the periosteum level. And the next picture will show you how these look. The periosteum is the fibrous membrane area, and that area covers the entire bone, and that coats the bone except for two cartilaginous ends. And what that has is it's essential for bone growth. That's where all the nutrition comes from in the bone. That's where all our, when you have fractures, where all the healing takes place. When you reduce a bone, you're actually reducing the periosteum level, and it acts as a covering to promote bone healing. So the periosteum is a very, very important function in the bone itself and essential for healing. Now, when you look at the next picture here, you can really see here the different areas. You can see that spongy area, the calcaneus, and what was that called? If you could say that 10 times, you get epiphysis, proximal epiphysis, and then down here you have the distal. Now, this is covered now with the bone, but underneath there would be all that same spongy calcaneus marrow developing on here. And what a lot of people don't realize, look at all these vessels that run through here. And here you can see this one main artery in the medulla area section here going right through the middle is where you have a big marrow cavity forming. So there's when you fracture a bone, you're just not breaking the bone. You also can lacerate vessels, arteries, and cause a lot of soft tissue and vessel damage. The compact bone there is in the middle, and you can see here's your whole nice little layer of your periosteum. So that's a nice looking bone. The articular cartilage you can see is just at the ends. Right here it has sometimes a different coloration to it, so it doesn't cover the entire bone for protection.
It's just where the joints
Yes, right. It's just where the articular cartilage is right, where the bones meet right. And that's just a little line that goes right around there exactly where the joints are. So this whole part here has no, the shaft, the diaphysis has no articular cartilage covering it. It's a layer of like almost like a cartilage type of a layering that goes over. It's a thin piece. I think you can see it right up in there. Yeah, it covers the whole bone. It's not soft. It's more of a firm.
But it's
protecting the bone. It's like a thin layer over the bone that protects.
If you think of other organs, think of a heart, it has a pericardium.
Right. Bless you.
The lungs, the pleura.
Right.
So it's not unusual. It's just a little firmer here because bone is hard tissue.
Right.
Living tissue, as you can see.
Right. It's just a lining covering the bone.
And
exactly.
That has nutrition and everything within
Within it for healing, right. So it plays a vital role in the bone itself. Bless you. The next one gives a little more detail on each one of those. We talked about the epiphyseal is the end of the bone. It does have a little bit of that cartilage because that attaches to your joints. The metaphyseal area there it's the wider end of the bone, and that has your growth plate and also some nutrition. And because of all the arteries running through there, anytime you have blood flow, you're going to get that nutrition. The diaphyseal is the shaft of the long bone. That has your yellow marrow. In your body, you have yellow marrow fat cells, and that helps to replenish your red marrow. So not all of your bones have red bone marrow after a while. Some of them have the ones that have the red bone marrow is your vertebrae, your ribs, your sternum, your ilium. So when they do bone marrow aspirations, that's why they go to those specific areas to get the marrow. That's why they wouldn't go to, let's say, your radius bone and try to get a bone marrow. So the long bones have your yellow, right? So it's really your long, some of your long bones. And then we'll go through, there's different types of bones, classes of bones. But the ones that have the red bone marrow, always remember your vertebrae, your ribs, your sternum, and then your ilium. So it's not all the long bones. Well, when you want to look at the different types of bones, if you want to classify them, you have your long bones are considered your femur, your tibia, your fibula, humerus, radius. And what's the long bones are considered your strong, you know, your solid bones. They can take a significant amount of force, but if they are fractured or broken, they do also carry a high risk of having the fat emboli travel from any one of those, primarily the femur. Your short bones are your tarsals, and that's right at the top of your foot there, your tarsals. Spongy, compact surface, doesn't have a lot of protection to it. The flat bones provide some protection. Your skull or your cranium is flat. Your scapula is flat. Your ribs are considered spongy, flat bones with two layers. And then your facial and your vertebrae bones are considered your irregular bones. They have an irregular shape to them if you looked at them. A lot of your bones in your face, and especially in your skull, too, once it's lacerated. Anything that's irregular is always a high risk when it's injured that it's going to lacerate vessels, injure arteries, or cause a lot of damage. So you're always concerned with those irregular bones that they're always going to have an associated vascular compromise with them or soft tissue injury occurring.
That's why your head bleeds a lot?
No, your head bleeds a lot because of all the capillaries. Your head, scalp has a lot of capillaries, and that's what makes it bleed.
But if you have a break, then
it's internally bleeding because of the laceration of the arteries and the vessels. The external bleeding you're getting because of the capillaries.
So that's why there's, like when they do facial surgeries, why there's all that oozing.
Yes.
Is that
right?
That's why that happens.
That's why a lot of that happens, the oozing, right. Exactly. But some of the internal bleeding you don't see unless you do a CAT scan or you do a... But the external, you always get a lot of bleeding from the face, the head, the scalp. You can bleed to death from a simple scalp wound if you don't control it.
I'm just a little confused about the fat emboli. Exactly where does that come from when the bone is broken? Is that within the bone?
Within the bone, because the bone stores fat.
Right. Okay.
So when the bone is broken, now that fat just can travel.
Okay.
And we don't want anything traveling outside the system, especially the fat. You can also have a clot form. So it could be a fat emboli or it could be a blood clot from the same thing.
Yesterday they had she had a hip fracture, and they took her pulse ox and it came back at 79%. So right away they took her down for testing because they thought maybe she'd have a
pulmonary embolus. Right. Pulmonary embolus, and what they do is a VQ scan for that, and they would bring her right down, and they would scan. And usually the patients, what symptoms did your patient have?
She had a really bad headache and a lot of pain. She really just didn't want to be bothered at all. She just sweating.
Sometimes a diaphoretic, they get very anxious. Sometimes their mental status changes because you have some loss of oxygenation because that's, and sometimes if they have multiple, they don't just have one, sometimes they have a lot of them. And that's why they're put on the DVT prophylaxis right away. Did she have the Flotrons on her feet
yes.
already? And sometimes they're on anticoagulants. We're really aggressive with that. And sometimes you can stop it with anticoagulants. Sometimes you can't. And that's
she
what's
on anticoagulants.
She was,
yes,
right.
She was
sometimes they'll put a window in for the hip and the femur fractures. They put a little, it's almost like a little umbrella that they'll put in after, you know, a day or two. And that prevents, so that the clot, if anything breaks through, it's not going to travel into the pulmonary system. And we do that with a lot of our multiple trauma patients that have significant fractures, and that umbrella will stay in there for a long time, or forever. Greenfield filter, right. It's called the Greenfield filter. Good. Greenfield filter, it's called, and it's surgically implanted. It stays in there for the rest of their life. And what it is it's almost like just an umbrella filter that stays in the vasculature so that if anything breaks free, it's not going to be able to travel up until the pulmonary system. Have you seen one?
Yeah, I saw it get done, actually.
No.
In my OR rotation.
Your OR rotation, so that's pretty neat how they put it in, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, not the surgeon's name, but he actually explained it. It was very, he let me see the x-ray and explain why it has to be below the